The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Welcome to the Fandom Files. We're a Sci-Fi Wire podcast about people who really, really love stuff. I'm Jordan Zacharin, the features editor here at Sci-Fi, and I'm joined by my good pal and co-host, Emily Gaudette, who is an editor at Contently. I did it right that time.
You did!
And like, on the script, I did all caps.
Oh.
Yeah. So, what's going on?
Not much. I'm having an okay week.
I wrote in the script that we never follow, I wrote that you were going to say, I own a BlackBerry.
I do not, but...
I know. And the whole thing was you being obsessed kind of with your BlackBerry.
Oh, you didn't even share the stock.
I know, I forgot to.
I did have a PDA when I was a teen.
A PDA?
Like a personal...
Like a Palm
assistant
Pilot?
Device? Like a Palm Pilot.
Yeah. Really? Why?
It was like before cell phones. And my dad was like, this will help you keep track of your schedule. And then like months later, the Nokia like brick came out.
Did it have one of those tiny little pencils?
Stylus, yeah.
How did anyone ever keep track of that?
I don't know. I had a little like flippy case and you would put the stylus back in there.
But it didn't fall out?
I don't remember. I was in seventh grade.
You know what I have on my iPhone? I have the new iPhone 8, but I have my headphones are from, still have the jack. And so I have to use that little connecting thing. And I've lost it so many times.
Yeah.
I lose everything, but that especially is frustrating.
Is that actually called a dongle or is that?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought people just started calling it that.
Just for fun?
Yeah, I don't know. Like a thingy.
And it just became a thing. People started calling it.
Yeah.
No, I think that's the technical term.
Oh, that's worse.
Yeah. Dongleberry. So what is the geekiest thing you did this week?
Geekiest thing I did this week is John Krasinski is playing Jack Ryan on Friday on Amazon. So I went back and watched a couple of my favorite Jack Ryan films.
I bet your dad got you into those.
Probably. Yeah. Yeah.
Which ones?
Clear and Present Danger and The Hunt for Red October.
So who's your favorite Jack? Harrison.
Yeah, Harrison, because he's like at the height of his handsomeness. But,
dreamy.
But Hunt for Red October is my favorite Jack Ryan film, but I'm not a huge fan of Alec Baldwin.
All right, it's weird that he was like a handsome leading man.
I know,
isn't
that weird?
It's so strange.
Now he's like a bloated body bag.
You can like see it a little bit still. You're like, I see it in you that...
But, yeah.
Anyways, I watched the first episode of the Jack Ryan show.
Oh, was it okay?
It's okay.
Okay, good. That's all.
I mean, it's one of those things where it's really hard to just be, to make a show where you're chasing down Middle Eastern terrorists, and no matter how empathetic you make them, they're still the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just tough. Like, at what point do I need to see Homeland again?
Yeah.
But Caitlin's watched a lot of it because she interviewed Wendell Pierce for it.
Oh, nice.
And so,
yeah, I'll talk to her about it.
She likes it. I watched the fourth episode of Castle Rock at my desk today. That show's okay.
I haven't gotten into it because it just seems like a heavy lift.
You're a Stephen King fanatic.
I'm a huge Stephen King fan, but I'm not. I think I'm done with the Easter egg thing. I don't care.
Yeah. No, we're running an ongoing thing about the Easter eggs because that's what you have to do on the internet.
Sure.
But I never really read any. I mean, I've seen movies. I've seen It and all those, but I've never really read Stephen King books.
Really?
I just don't get a thrill from horror, especially reading it. And so, I know he's a good writer. I know I'm not slandering Stephen King. I'm just saying it was never that interesting to me.
Yeah, not even like in defense of him. It's more so than horror. He writes stories about like 11-year-old boys going on adventures. Like that's, I would say just if you did it a numbers game, like that's what he's talking about most of the time.
I was just actually saying to Caitlin today about something else. I think it was in reference to all the boys I loved before, whatever it's called. Like, I don't care about... I really love the movie Eighth Grade because I thought that was really relatable.
Me
but
too.
Other than that, I don't care about teenagers or young people in the sense that, like, I don't need to see their stories. Like, let them learn a little bit and fail a lot, and then I'm interested in relating to them.
Did you see the movie Stand By Me?
Yes.
Yeah, so Stephen King wrote that, and there's a great line in that where he's like, and we talked all night about the things boys talk about before they think about girls. And I was just like, that's my favorite age of kid.
Yeah.
To read about and to work with, actually.
I don't know that there's a time that boys don't think about girls. Well, I mean, like, that's a big generalization.
10, 11?
No, they think about it. But they don't maybe think about it like all consuming, I want to date them, but they think about them. And by that, I mean, like, I did. I mean, I don't have an in with all the boys.
That'd be weird. But, what did you do this week? I didn't even ask you.
I saw you yesterday. We saw we watched
so
the debate.
Geeky.
Yeah, that we watched.
Oh yeah,
the Cynthia Cuomo debate. Cynthia and the Cynthia Nixon Andrew Cuomo debate. And it's funny to me. I was watching the news and they had all these people were watching in bars across the city, and like, who do you think? Would you think there were any bars where people were supporting Andrew Cuomo, like the Cuomo bar?
I know. I kind of thought about that. Our bar was clearly for Nixon, but it wasn't like everyone was going, yeah! Like, I think there was an element of, like, what the fuck are we watching?
Well, I think also, like, I was talking with Julie about this afterwards, like, even if Cuomo wins, and we're getting political here, and I know people who rate our show don't like that, but
bear with us. It's local politics, so it's a little neutered, you know?
It's less, like, there's less of a threat than when, like, Hillary versus Trump was, you know, that felt like an existential battle. And,
I mean,
Cuomo wins, it's like, all right, neither of us are huge Cuomo fans, but, like, we're not going to, like, have our neighbors hunted down.
The Tappan Zee Bridge is going to have a new name that's, like, the update.
Yeah. So, anyways, I did that. But speaking of, God, this sounds really weird. Speaking of children.
Okay.
I took my niece and nephew to they're, like, 10 and 14.
Mm-hmm.
They had never played pinball before. And so I took them to a pinball place in the city, like 23rd Street.
A strictly pinball bar?
Strictly pinball, and then a few retro, I mean, it wasn't a bar, they're children.
It wasn't a barcade.
No, it wasn't a barcade, but it was called Modern Pinball. It was pretty cool.
You know what's funny? I'm surprised to hear that there are actual arcades without bars.
Right, yeah. You know? Well, it's strange because why would a kid play a game like that when they could just play literally every cool video game ever? At the palm of their hands, but I think they really enjoyed it. They're like,
sure,
holy
they
crap, what is this?
Yeah.
So we did that, and then we watched only the first half of it because I had to go, but I introduced them to the first Godzilla movie.
Aww.
Final Wars. I showed them that because that's like metal.
What year?
2004. So it's not corny.
Oh, you said, their first.
Yeah.
I thought you said the first.
Oh, no. Like, they'd be like horrified if I showed them the 1964 Godzilla. They'd be like, what's happening to everyone?
Everything's made of wood.
Yeah. Why is everyone dying? This is horrible. So for today's show, we wanted to honor Labor Day because that is today, or the day that the show is coming out on iTunes. So we wanted to talk about nerdy jobs, kind of like dirty jobs, but, you know, less dirty, I guess, mostly.
Sometimes.
Anyways, yeah, sometimes. you know, we work in a really weird field that, you know, we get to write and talk and make videos about the stuff we love, comic books and movies and TV shows and all that good stuff. And obviously people do it because they love it. No one, like, goes into this just because they want to make a killing at it, because unless you're, like, writing Star Wars movies, you're not going to probably make that much of a killing. So people do it because they love it, but it's really hard to make a living doing it. And people work in all sorts of fields, whether it's part-time or full-time, to try and make some cash being a geek. Like I said, we've been pretty lucky about this, but I get to do an oral history about Disney Afternoon. So I've been interviewing people who worked on DuckTales. That is exceedingly rare, and we realize that. But what we wanted to do is talk to people from the geek space about all their different nerdy jobs. Whether it's when we got a comic book store manager, we have people who work on podcasts, we got, you know, someone who runs a podcast about nerdy jobs to talk to us today. So we want to talk about and honor the people who make the geek economy work, because I'm very fascinated by that ecosystem.
Yeah, so I knew I wanted to find someone who worked in a comic book shop, so I figured I would go to someone at my favorite comic book shop, which is Kamikaze in Somerville, Massachusetts. It's at Davis Square on the Red Line. And our guest today, Jill Carter, is a manager at the store that I used to spend like 2 hours every Wednesday in. So hi, Jill. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. Are you at the store now?
I am, actually.
Ooh,
yeah,
I love it.
Ooh,
I'm actually right out back.
Oh, cool. Can you maybe just describe, like, how long you've been there, what you're into?
Yeah. So I think I've been at the shop for about 3.5, almost 4 years now.
Mm.
I started part time while I was working at a restaurant, and I just really wanted to get back into the industry in general. I left my restaurant job to come work at Kamikaze and eventually became the manager, and I love it, and I'm having kind of the time of my life. Never a dull moment, never bored, always busy. I'm very much into, I read a lot of like new comics. I'm into a lot of like sci-fi and like small press stuff. Mm-hmm. I love collecting toys. We're a big toy store. Mm-hmm. So lots of like little tiny weird monster guys, anybody who lives in a swamp, finger puppets, miniatures. That's kind of what I'm into.
Awesome. Yeah, I was going to say, even comic book shops in New York. So I actually moved to New York right around the time you started at Kamikaze. So that's funny. But Kamikaze for Jordan and for listeners is just packed wall to wall with like rare toys.
Mm.
And my favorite thing is they make toys based on like any movie that's even vaguely sci-fi. So it's like characters that you don't think have an action figure. They all do, and they're all in Kamikaze.
Oh yeah,
that's awesome.
You know, we have a Shia LaBeouf action figure in the case right now. You know,
from which movie?
Indiana Jones.
Oh God.
Yeah, there's a Joseph Gordon-Levitt action figure. Like,
oh my God.
From which movie is he in?
Sting has an action figure.
Batman.
From Dune. Right.
Yeah. That's
Batman.
Crazy.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt in Dark Knight Returns. That's just him in a coat.
So
you should see his stupid face. Yeah, it's wonderful.
How often do you find yourself in a conversation where you're like recommending stuff to people? I would imagine a lot.
Near constantly. It really all depends on who's in the shop. I feel like everyone's always kind of like looking for like what's next, you know, because there's a lot out there these days, and you sort of need a little bit of help sometimes to navigate all the new releases, like what's actually good. And I think our customers kind of trust us. We have kind of a, you know, it's not a huge staff. There's maybe like 6 to 8 of us that are, you know, recommending books to different people, and we all have our different tastes and leanings and what we love to recommend. And I think our customers trust us to point them in the right direction. You know, we're not just trying to get them out of our hair or, upsell them necessarily. We always just want to to give them stories that they would enjoy and want to read.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it sounds like it's a pretty iconic place. How is the business? How is the industry? I mean, comics kind of have, you know, they're huge culturally, but they don't always do well selling in print. So how is the business side being as the manager?
It's kind of tricky. I mean, like comics is a pretty volatile industry, and it's a little bit hard to navigate. It's difficult to order sometimes because you're ordering like months ahead of time. You need to anticipate what people are going to be into, what they want to buy, what they want to subscribe to, which is really what keeps comics in print. And, you know, it really gets it into the hands of people just to get those pre-orders, to subscribe. So I don't know. I mean, like as a business as a whole, we wouldn't survive if we weren't a bookstore, if we didn't sell comics.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that we would really like have the same reputation or the same like volume of business if we didn't like really focus on new comics and graphic novels.
Yeah, it was Kamikaze that introduced me to having a pull list, and then when I moved to New York, you guys just shipped them to me every month for like a year.
Our mail order is a great service. You know, because sometimes you don't want to find a new comic book store, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there's like so many great ones out there, but you know, when you like find you like your niche, you know, we care about our subscribers too. We always hate to see them go.
Yeah, I mean, I would walk in and say my name and someone would be like, oh yeah, 141, and go in the back. Like, I can't think of another store like today that I go to that has regulars where they're like chilling in the store.
Pharmacy.
Yeah, pharmacy. It's never a good reason.
Yeah, I know my guy who's got gout medicine. So what happens when, speaking of the business side, like let's say something's a real stinker, like Secret Empire last year kind of stunk, right? And people were not feeling it for all the way till the end. At least I wasn't. So... what happens then? Does that make it really tough since you had to pre-order so many?
You have to order tight on these things. And with big events, you order more, you know, for the wall for anyone who might come in and you know, want to catch up or like want to get in on it. But if it tanks or if it's bad, you kind of have to roll with it, and you put like sets of, you know, issues together, and you like you mark those down. If you can't like make your profit on it, you want to make you basically like you want to break even, and you want to just like move those comics out, because there's always going to be like another thing coming. Like this industry really doesn't stop. And you have to keep thinking ahead, like 2 to 4 months. So yeah, I don't know. Like people love to talk about what they hate too. So if it tanked and it was bad, you'll at least get some like really good conversation with customers and just random people like walking in about what they thought about it.
We don't want to keep you too long, but can you tell me just a little bit about Ladies of Kamikaze and how you're involved with that?
Well, so the Ladies of Kamikaze, they are a group of women who run events like book clubs and like screenings, and there's like bake sales and charity events, and we're doing the third Ladies Con, which is like a free convention that that spotlights women creators like in our community, and anyone who like wants to come can come because it's free and you can meet all these creators for free. My role in that, I work with them. They do events and stuff. I sort of facilitate the event spaces and like ordering books for their book clubs and, you know, just kind of getting everyone. I'm sort of not officially like a Lady of Kamikaze. I'm a lady manager at Kamikaze. But they're a group that, they like have their own like blog and they have a podcast and they do all these events and it's really fantastic.
Yeah.
And these are
I'm just like there to kind of direct traffic for them, I think.
And these are people that like are more customers than staff?
Yeah. They started out as customers and you know, I don't know, they've become friends, like they're all close. There's a lot of like overlap between some of our like event runners and our customers and our friends and who you see every day. Like everything is very interwoven in our community, which we love. Like community is a huge part of our store.
Yeah.
And I think really what like makes it special is like all of the ways that we can like reach out to our community, have folks come in, and, you know, just have a good time, like play some Pokemon, like play some games, like talk about books, and you know, find some like cool toys and things that you maybe forgot about or never saw before. It's very special.
Yeah.
All right. Last two quick questions. Mm-hmm. One.
Okay.
What do you do with all the unbought comics eventually? And then two, what's been your hottest seller this year or this summer?
So what do we do with all of the unpurchased comic books? Well, there's a number of things that we could do with those. We if there are like complete runs, you can bag them up into sets, and you know, there are like, you know, bargain hunters that they love those like $2 bin books, like dollar bin books, bagged sets, so you don't have to go looking for out of print comics to complete your runs. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of giveaways too. Like for our events, for Free Comic Book Day, for events at the movie theater that's just down the street from us, we like give away like posters and books and things like that when they do like midnight movies. And we also like we have like a kind of a wholesale. We'll sell off like long boxes of comics to another like store that just has a web presence now. So we kind of, you know, just like liquidate, move it out, because we buy lots of collections as well. So we just constantly have this huge influx of things coming in. So the quickest way to get it out is bulk.
Cool. And cool. So what has been the hottest seller?
The hottest seller this summer, well, for a minute now, I think like Monstrous by Marjorie Lewin Sana Takeda has been a pretty huge book, and which is really interesting because it seems like sort of like a niche book, like it's kind of a horror book, like the art's very particular, it's sort of intense, it's kind of like more like adult oriented, but it's great. It's one of our favorites. It's one of those rare everybody on staff loves it kind of books. So that's been really great. Things like Immortal Hulk, like that's fairly recent, but like, you know, that one's good. Domino has been, you know, selling pretty well. But yeah, like I think Monstrous has been kind of consistently just like stellar. And then of course there's Saga, which has been probably the best selling comic for the last like 5 years.
Not next
year. And now they're on hiatus.
Now they're on hiatus for a year. What are we going to do?
How dare they?
Luckily, you'll never ever run out of great comics to read. I haven't had that problem yet.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I hope you have a good night at the store.
Our next guest is Jason Ward, who runs the entire MakingStarWars.net universe, which is gigantic at this point. Jason, what's up?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Doing well. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
So we, like I said to you before, we're doing this whole show about different jobs you can have in
nerdery.
Nerdery, fandom, all those, whatever you want to call it. And making Star Wars has gone from, I assume was a hobby to like a whole big thing. So why don't you tell us like how it all happened?
Yes.
Yeah. I originally started with just kind of a Tumblr, you know, where I was putting up Star Wars pictures. And at some point, someone was like, hey, I like your article that you just did. Because I put up like one small little article. You should make a site. And I kept saying, yeah, I'll do it. And then I finally made the jump, and so many people had been following what I was doing on the Tumblr side that I kind of got an audience early on, thankfully. And when the Star Wars community at that time, in terms of like websites and stuff, it was almost all about the Clone Wars.
Mm.
And everybody was really welcoming, and everyone was like really cool back then. And so when I made that jump, I just had like a bunch of support from people that were already doing it.
So this was like 2006, 2007?
It was a pretty nice era, like right as Disney had purchased Lucasfilm.
Okay, so it was a little bit later. Got it. And so obviously you got in at the right time because everything went crazy.
Yeah, kind of like Indiana Jones when he grabs his hat.
Yeah. And so like now, I mean, you have so many podcasts on your network. Tell us about how the whole thing works now.
Yeah, well, basically what ended up kind of going on was that I ended up talking to everybody in the Star Wars community. I ended up kind of knowing everybody. And when I wrote things about Star Wars, people read it, thankfully. And so what that ended up getting me was access to sources and people who, you know, knew what was going on in the films and stuff like that. So when I asked a question, sometimes I would get the answer.
Cool. I mean, like, that's Disney's kind of like a fortress. That must have been really difficult to, like, get those sources.
Yeah, it's really kind of a lot more open than you would think. I mean, not that they want it to be. They don't want it to be open. But there's just so many people involved and so many people that have the answers to the questions that you ask. I tend to, for whatever lucky reason, tend to get them.
So what's an example of like a I'm not saying out your sources, obviously, but like what
a
kind
good
of people?
Scoop,
yeah,
maybe. Yeah.
Like what? Sorry, I couldn't hear you.
So if like someone, so like what kind of like on what level like employee will come to you and like, hey, I heard this or I saw this. Like what kind of stuff do you usually get from them?
In terms of like that kind of stuff, I've had sources or have sources from every kind of tier of level that you could imagine, from Disney to Lucasfilm to people that would be doing the most mundane things next to a set, not even involved in a set. And it's been pretty nuts. And it's kind of difficult sometimes to weed out, like, do I listen to this person?
Sure.
Like, do they know what they're seeing? And stuff like that, but it's overall everyone I've talked to has been has had my best intentions at heart, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, so mostly the information has been pretty solid.
And so let's talk about all the other podcasts you have on the network. I mean, it's kind of a huge operation now.
Yeah, like I met like I was saying, I met my friend Steele at Comic-Con from Australia. And then he ended up jumping on the network, and it kind of just slowly became a collection of the podcasts that I listen to, that of the Star Wars shows that I want to support, and that I don't think do the same thing. Like me and Still, for instance, might cover the same topic, but he's such a different person than I am. So we end up kind of like the shows don't step on each other's toes. And it just kind of like organically came together. And I, when I was younger, I played in did a lot of indie music. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of just ended up sort of taking that kind of model and applying it to podcasting, which strangely worked.
So how does it, like, I mean, what does the business side look like? I mean, this amount of work that goes into it, I'm sure there's some sort of reward.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, in terms of like monetary side of things, it's basically ad based, you know, mm-hmm. and on the podcast side, it's sponsors and stuff like that. And podcasting, as you may or may not know, is like really weird for sponsors, because they're down to give so much money to radio. But when it comes to podcasts, they know that they could play games, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we've had like really, really great eras of the podcast really being like, wow, this is a job. Like, this is fantastic. And then other eras where it's like, my job is to argue with people that, you know, 50,000 people a week is worth paying for. And it's like, I don't know any other medium where you have to argue for that, but in podcasting, you do.
What kind of games are they like? Do they play? Are they just not want to give you money, or they just ask for too many stats? Like, how does it work?
Yeah, well, how it kind of goes is that they don't want to trust the stats that you give them.
Huh.
Even when you give them access, and then they will say things like they don't know how much what the retention is and stuff like that. Like, are people listening to the whole show? And it's like, hey, we're doing a pre-roll. Like, that's what we're selling. Like, the opening ad on the show. Like, anybody who hears any of the show is likely gonna hear that.
Right.
But they just kind of like I said, they're used to the radio format, and it's really weird because podcasting is like the content can be evergreen.
Mm-hmm.
So if we don't remove the ad, like, the ad's there forever.
Sure.
You know, and there's always going to be people who are going back to like hear like an interview that we did, or to hear like what was going on in 2015 before Force Awakens or something like that. And but on radio, it's a one-time deal. The, mm-hmm. the ad plays. If they heard it, they heard it. If they didn't, it's gone forever. And so you would think that sponsors would be more willing to like jump to the podcast medium, you know, but they either are too afraid still, or like I said, they're just kind of like playing the game, hoping to get like a really good ad for nothing.
I feel like the only ads I ever hear on podcasts is really just for mattresses.
Mattresses or Blue Apron.
Yeah.
Blue Apron. Yeah. Yeah. Lots of Blue Apron, lots of mattresses, and therapy now too. Starting to hear a lot of like online therapy.
Oh, yeah, like
stuff
cheap therapy,
out.
Which makes sense for a nerd podcast.
Yeah.
So what is, so obviously, like, you know, you post a lot of stuff that comes from set, or people, you hear stories, you hear, I don't want to call it rumors because you substantiate them, but you hear things that maybe people don't want to leak out. What is the relationship like with the powers that be as you try to run your business as an actual business?
Yeah, well, in terms of like Lucasfilm itself, I have a lot of friends there, so obviously that's how things kind of work out for me.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, like, I think, like, for instance, like, the PR probably wishes that I didn't do some things that I do. Like, they got pretty salty at me in the past for like talking about like the posters coming out, stuff like that. You know, like what was going to be on posters. And so there is like a line for them where they will kind of be like, hey, you need to chill out, you know? And I try and be respectful because I do love Star Wars. I mean, like, I love it. I want it to succeed. I want them to keep making the films, you know? So in no way do I want to be like, you know, a wrench in the machine or whatever you call it. I don't want to like screw anything up. At the same time, like, we're fans, and we're thirsty. We want to talk about it, you know? We want things to, like, talk about and to, like, discuss, and not just the weak things come out. And that's kind of, like, a weird thing. I think Lucasfilm's pretty respectful overall of, like, fan stuff. Like, they kind of mostly stay out of it. They kind of mostly just go, like, my name's Paul, and that's between you all. Kind of, like, that's kind of their attitude usually.
And, you know, it's interesting. It's an interesting position to be in. Like, you love the thing, but you're reporting on the thing, and you want the thing to do well, but you have to also be sort of objective, and they need you because you help spread the word, but they don't want to have you fully on board. It's a very strange dance.
Mm-hmm.
It is. It's really weird. And, like, it's one that I don't think that they really ever want to acknowledge the fact that we do help them. And I do think that there's a part for some aspects of Lucasfilm where they're like, they kind of do like that certain things get out there. And
sure.
But I think in terms of like the main like Disney side and the PR side, I think that they have like this really complicated like design, and they would like that to go according to plan.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, my perspective is that if I can get to the information, so can pretty much anyone else with similar skills. And when I report on stuff, though, it's from a place of love.
Mm-hmm.
And like if you like look at like a film blogger who like covers like a similar topic to me, there's like kind of an air of cynicism to a lot of it. And things are not, and like when a scoop comes out from like a film blog sometimes, there's sort of like, they're not giving Star Wars the benefit of the doubt, if
sure.
you will. And they'll get that from me because I like it too much.
It's like being a home team reporter.
Yeah. Different baseball thing. What do you do during the off season? Like what's the dry spell in a year between, I mean, I know that if they're on production, it's like, let's ramp up coverage of that, but. Do you do like retrospectives or cover ancillary stuff?
Yeah, it's kind of like there isn't an off season in a way. There's definitely an audience off season, and I don't get to take that break though. You know what I mean? Because there's always cartoons mm-hmm. and comics and books, and like pretty much if I'm not covering something, then I'm just being lazy when you get down to it, because there's always something. But after a film comes out, like people do check out, I'd say for a good like 3-4 months, there's kind of like a big dip. And like with Solo, for instance, like I was like kind of nervous about that movie because there was no like rising tide in mm-hmm. terms of like traffic and interest.
Mm.
And so when it came out and it didn't perform super well, I kind of saw that one coming. But now with episode 9, filming right now, that tide is kind of rising again.
You know, we saw after, and I spoke about this with you for an article, but after The Last Jedi, that huge divide, I guess, between fans who liked it and fans who didn't like it, and then fans who are horrible racists, there was a huge divide. Do you feel like fans are now kind of coming back together ahead of episode 9, or is there still that major divide?
Yeah, well, what I think it is that when people are really bored, then they will tend to go into a negative place.
Mm-hmm.
And with episode 9 coming, there's so much hope and excitement. There's a new film coming, and Abrams is back and all that kind of stuff. And so I think mostly right now it feels very positive.
Interesting.
But then if you go down to like the YouTube side of things, you know, where like cynicism sells, then I don't think anything's changed there. Like it's just business as usual.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's where they like to make long videos about why Last Jedi stunk.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Or why they should release a Snyder Cut.
Yeah, Snyder Cut, Ruin Johnson, what they like to call Rian Johnson.
So clever.
It like breaks my heart, though, because I really think that Rian Johnson is the best filmmaker to have made a Star Wars movie, probably.
Oh, no question.
Like when you,
yeah.
Yeah, and it's like we got what we always wanted, and then we just have these people that are just like, no. And I'm like, oh, come on. this is where I want them to go. I mean, Abrams is fun, but I want more Rian Johnsons and a little less of like the Spielberg types, you know?
Well, it's like why, like, you know, art film doesn't always break out. You know, people want their big dumb. Not that Abrams like dumb makes dumb movies. I like the Force Awakens.
But he's like Spielberg. It's like
crowd
at least
pleasers.
Common denominator. Like, yeah.
Which I mean, I like the Force Awakens.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Same, so. Yeah.
How do you feel about? I ask because I don't know how to feel about the live action series that's going to stream.
I'm hearing really cool things all the time. Like I ran a rumor recently that it's going to be about. The planet Mandalore, like where the people in the Boba Fett armor come from.
Ooh.
Cool.
And and about after Return of the Jedi, kind of like the Empire's not there anymore, and so this power vacuum needs to be filled and stuff, and it goes, and supposedly it's going to go into this interesting place if that scoop is accurate. And also, when I was at an event, I saw Favreau there, and he had a Mandalorian Mercs thing on, which I thought was kind of like a weird nod to I'm doing this.
Nice.
Interesting. Yeah. It'll be interesting when, like, I mean, the cartoon's been around for so long, but all these live-action shows that I don't... Well, do you think it'll be too much Star Wars in the way that, like, some Marvel stuff or doesn't do great on TV because it's like, all right, it's enough?
Yeah, I kind of think that the films are for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
People go to the movies. There's a new Star Wars movie, and if they're going to the movies, they're probably going to see that. And I think that audience is there, and I think if Star Wars wants to grow and be more than what it is, which I think it's actually fine where it is, but if it wants to be more, I think that getting that TV audience is just something that someplace it can try and, a fan base it can try and build. And also, I kind of think that it's film consumers and TV consumers are slightly different. And, like, you know, in the sense that, like, people who are, like, really in, like, Game of Thrones, they like it that it goes on and romances and politics and things that you can't really get too deep in with film. And I think that's an opportunity to potentially tell, like, a deeper Star Wars story than what we've had. And so I'm optimistic that it could go that way. Or it might just be the Star Wars TV movie of the week. Who knows?
Well, that wouldn't be bad.
No, I'm happy. More Star Wars is better for me.
All right. Well, listen, Jason, thank you so much for taking the time to talk, man.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely.
Have a good day, you guys.
You too.
Thank you.
And our next guest, Adrian Buskey, who runs a site and podcast called nerdforaliving.com, which is, it really fits our theme for today.
Yeah.
So thanks for being here.
Hey, happy to be.
So tell us about Nerd for a Living. Where did the idea come from? Were you trying to be a nerd for a living? How did the whole thing come together?
So my wife, Wendy Buskey, and I started Nerd for a Living back in 2013. And the genesis for the whole thing was that we've been on the convention circuit as just, you know, fans and nerds for a while. And but we were also working professionally. My wife works in advertising. I was in radio for 11 years and also in, like, digital media. And so we were on the con scene, and we were going to a lot of panels where people were talking about their careers and whether it was, you know, in creative fields or in otherwise, you know, stuff related to the entertainment industries. And the refrain that we kept hearing from people, we would talk to people at panels and stuff, just, you know, people in the audience, was this constant thing of, like, oh man, I really wish that I could, you know, I could work in a field that I really love, but, like, you know, I'm an accountant or I'm a lawyer or I'm a coder or something like that. Like, you know, I'm not a writer or a, you know, an author or something, or, you know, an actor. And so I don't know how to get into it. And, you know, and the thing we kept thinking was, like, well, you know, Blizzard, you know, needs lawyers and Marvel needs people to do their website. And, you know, there's all these different kinds of jobs in these worlds. And we, around the same time, we had started doing panel programming for things that we had been, you know, asked to join in, because I was doing, like, a webcomic at the time, so it was on, like, writing panels, and my wife was doing marketing panels, and we'd done some various things, and we just realized that there was this kind of, this hole where a lot of people that, what we refer to as the ambitious geeks, were out there trying to figure out how to make some kind of living in these related fields that they love, and, you know, and we wanted to be able to help them out in some way. So when we started Nerd for a Living, we launched it from our hotel at San Diego Comic-Con in 2013, literally hit the button and put the site live from the hotel, and then went out and started handing out cards. it really was intended initially to be more of like a blog, more of like a, you know, information resource site. And the podcast was something that we started kind of almost as a marketing tool, because I had worked on another, like, produced another show's, another site's podcast for a while. And it seemed like a good way to kind of jump into it and have cool conversations. And then pretty quickly, it was the thing that performed best for us, that people responded really well to. And we started getting some really high profile guests on it. And eventually that became what we did. So after a certain point, the podcast really became our main focus. And then we diversified and did some other shows and stuff. And, but yeah, we've been doing it, like I said, since 2013.
So do you connect a lot of people with jobs, or is more you talking to people with those nerdy jobs for the podcast? Like, what is the present day, the bulk of what you do?
So, I mean, these days, we've gone through a lot of iterations as far as figuring out exactly what it would be. And people would ask us a lot in the beginning. They're like, oh, are you like headhunters? Are you like, you know, connect people to jobs? And only indirectly in the sense that we do a lot of like, we do a lot of networking and meet a lot of people in, you know, various entertainment industries. And so we have, you know, we've helped connect people that way because, you know, we know great people in various places and we like to introduce them to each other. But really we've been much more, I mean, to a certain extent, the podcast is kind of like infotainment, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
It's like they're entertaining conversations that are also like, you know, full of information for helping people, you know, find their way in these careers. And then in the, like on the convention scene, you know, we do tons of programming at shows. So, a lot of them are about marketing. They're about careers. They're, we have kind of a signature panel called How to Be a Nerd for a Living that we do all over the place. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, been, we get a lot of people from diverse career sets, and diverse backgrounds to get up and talk about their careers and stuff. So, what's been interesting for us with Nerd for a Living is that like, it has been more of a stepping stone for us into other like business areas because of Nerd for a Living. I actually do a fair amount of speaking engagements now. And so, you know, my income is diversified across like a number of different things. Some of it's speaking, some of it's consulting. You know, we've sold advertising and some product and stuff through Nerd for a Living in the past, but that's not as much the focus. It's mm-hmm. almost been, I don't know if you'd call it like lead generation, like it's led us into some different areas and it keeps us in contact with really, really interesting people in the industries that from our home base in St. Louis, we would have never come in contact with otherwise.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned one of the first things you mentioned was like, you know, Blizzard needs lawyers or mm-hmm. Marvel needs someone for their website. You know, I guess when I think of initially, like when I grew up wanting to do stuff, it's like I want to draw a comic book, I want to write a movie. But there's so many ways to work in geek culture without being the creator of the thing.
Yeah, and I think it's challenging because the visible face of most of these kind of creative fields are, you know, the actors, the artists, the writers, you know, they're the ones that we see most easily. I think what's great in the age of social media is that we've got a greater exposure to the people who work behind the scenes. And we get to see a little bit more of, you know, like, you know, how the soup is made. But it's still challenging for people when, you know, when they think about, oh man, I wish I could work in movies, but you know, I'm not an actor. I'm not a director. I'm not a writer. I'm not a producer. They're like, there's literally thousands and thousands of different kinds of jobs you could get into in doing that. But a lot of what we try to kind of help people figure out is, you know, what are those homes where they could, you know, go find themselves working in? Where can they assist in these things? And, you know, is there something that's lucrative? Is there a job there? But also kind of figuring out the realities of those businesses. You know, a lot of jobs in the creative industries, the creative economy, they require sacrifice. They require a lot of resilience. They require sometimes you to be in very specific places in the country in order to take advantage of them. And, you know, and sometimes people don't know that first step into things. So, you know, so a lot of what we have done is trying to like help people figure that out.
What's a really popular, I work at a TV network, right? We're in mm-hmm. sci-fi. And so there's people that work in marketing and there's people that work on the website. And I mean, I work on the website mm-hmm. A little bit different. But yeah, so what are the really popular jobs that you've seen people kind of pursue once they realize that's the thing they can do?
Yeah.
I don't know that I have a great answer for that other than to say that an explosion that I've seen in the last 10 years is people who have entered into kind of the genre entertainment field through the convention scene and through small businesses kind of that are ancillary to it. I think a lot of that has been artists, that has been crafters, and that's been people with other kind of interesting creative pursuits that have found that a really direct way to a very interested clientele is through the convention scene. Now, granted, that's very niche. It can be really easy if you live on the con scene like we have for years to kind of see it as sort of the be-all end-all of the geek community, you know, and to kind of lose track of the fact that a ton of people never make it to a convention but are still just as interested. Mm-hmm. But it's a good way to kind of dip your toe in and first experiment with it.
Right.
One of the things with Nerd for a Living is that we've really talked to people across a lot of different avenues. I mean, we started off, we were talking very small business, and we were talking people who were doing startups that were in the nerd space. And then eventually we were talking to actors and directors and writers and, and we kind of, because the conversations were really fun, we ended up talking to some really, really interesting and very notable people. And we're actually, we've been on hiatus for a little while, and we're relaunching in the next like couple of months with something that's a little bit more focused on kind of where we were in the beginning, which was in that small business and business and career startup space. So I can't say too much about it just yet, but we are kind of going back to our roots on some of that soon.
Awesome. Well, we are really looking forward to finding out what we can do, what more we can do for a living in this nerd space.
Yes, please.
Yeah. I kind of think games getting grinding me down. Maybe I'll become a lawyer for Marvel.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's a few things I can say about, you know, the job hunt and this stuff. Things that I've learned from our guests, like across, I mean, fairly universal stuff that I've heard over and over again from everybody that we've talked to. I mean, one of that is recognizing that, like, there are very few, like, direct paths to like the career that you want. You know, very few people that we've talked to came into the game with a specific, I'm going to do just this exact thing, and then went and did it. Most of them had a pretty winding path in. And so people shouldn't be discouraged if somewhere along the lines they figured out they wanted to do something different, or if their path really evolved in front of them based on what they were good at. Maybe they didn't even realize they were going to be good at it. So those things change a lot. It's really, really important for people to be resilient, to have that ability to roll with the punches and to, realize there's going to be struggle and to be able to bounce back from that struggle. I think that being aware of what your own ability is, you know, in order to be able to deal with those things and keep swinging is really important, as well as just self-care, you know.
Sure.
And a big thing in this part of the business, too, a lot of people are doing this stuff as side hustle. You know, they're dipping their toe in, they're trying something new business, and or new career. And when you've got those things on the side, it can be really, really tough to manage a business, because you have to be everything. You know, you have to be your marketer, you have to be your business manager, you have to do your taxes, you have to do all this stuff that you don't normally do as an employee.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really challenging for a lot of people, because like it's an insane amount of work, and it's asking you to wear 15 different hats and have expertise that maybe you don't have, particularly because a lot of the creative class aren't good at that stuff. You know,
sure.
They're not good at numbers and stuff. So it's learning like how much of that you can take on yourself, but then how much of it you're going to have to figure out how to offload in some way or another.
Yeah, how many people you get to donate your Patreon, and how many people that can help you hire with accountants? It's a whole business.
Yeah. I mean, I saw a quote recently I really love, and it's that a struggling business spends time to save money, but a successful business spends money to save time. And that really resonated with me, because I think, especially when you're a small business and you're on a limited budget, you know, your thinking is that, well, I'll take on more and more and more myself, because I can, you know, I can give up some sleep, or I can, you know, skip time with the family, or I can do whatever so that I can just get more of these things done. But it's a really quick path to burnout. Eventually, you're not going to do very well at these things because you're trying to do too much. And also, I mean, it can be tough, because it can mean you'll be doing everything but what you love most. You know, you might have gotten into the game to be an author and then find that you spend most of your time being a marketer or managing your business stuff and less time writing. And that sucks. That's, you know, not what you got out of the game for.
Oh,
so,
God. Yeah, that too real.
Emily almost had a heart attack.
Yeah.
She almost fell over. She's like, why are you talking about my life?
Oh, God. Direct attack.
Yeah, and the other,
you're right, though. Yeah.
Well, the other struggle, too, is when people are doing things as side hustle, if they're not financially dependent on these things yet as being their full-time job and their full income, it can be really easy to undercharge for what they do, whether it's, you know, as a service or as a product. And in doing so, one, I mean, you devalue your own work. But two, you make it really, really hard on the rest of the people in the creative economy that are doing this full time, because you basically undervalue their work and you drive prices down. And that's really unhelpful to everybody, because by the time that you're like, oh, I'm going to do this full time, but I've been charging all these cheap rates for years, then suddenly it's really hard to up those into something that can sustain, you know, your income and your livelihood. It's a really careful line to walk, and it's hard to figure out. But it, you know, it takes some research and some asking around other people that are in your field. But, you know, for the love of God, please don't screw over everybody by charging, you know, super cheap prices just because you can right now.
Yeah, that freelance thing is the uncertainty of freelance is a very real problem.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, I've been full-time freelance and self-employed for about 5 years.
Wow.
And, you know, thankfully my wife, has a really good job in advertising, and she keeps our stability. And then on my side of things, it's feast or famine. You know, I have some really lucrative months, and then I have sometimes where the work's much thinner, and I'm diversified across a bunch of different things. Like I said, I mean, I'm a speaker, but I'm a freelance copywriter. I'm a graphic designer. I'm a web developer. I can pick up a lot of different kind of work. Mm-hmm. And those things are in my skill set. So I have that ability to, you know, to round out the income for those different kinds of things. And I can chase different work when those availabilities, you know, come along. But if you haven't done this kind of work before, like, you need to do the research on it beforehand, because being self-employed is a struggle financially and a struggle, you know, picking up work sometimes. But it's also, there's a lot of realities of being your own boss that can be tough. Like for me, which that I didn't even think about, which is that I'm a massive extrovert who works from home alone. And that wears me out, you know? So, which is probably why I word vomit like crazy, like I'm doing right now. You know, you have to, again, you know, I said self-care is a big deal with this kind of stuff. You need to recognize your own work style. And, you know, if you're happy kind of being a antisocial hermit and you get a lot done that way, man, this kind of thing's great for you. But if you're extroverted and you recharge through social time, you have to structure your life in new ways in order to make sure that you get that recharge.
Cool. Yeah. Well, listen, thanks so much for taking the time, man.
Yeah.
Really appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm happy to join it. Thank you so much.
And our next guest is Susan Bin. She is an artist and animator who works in anime and other awesome fields within the world of animation. And she emailed me today, and she's telling me about how she goes from convention to convention, and she's on that scene, and that's where she makes a bulk of her living. And I think that's a really interesting way that a lot of really talented geeks wind up making a lot of their money. So we thought it'd be awesome to have her on the show.
Welcome.
Thanks.
So, like you said in your email, you were working full-time in animation, and then you decided to go solo doing the convention thing.
Yes.
So, give us a little bit of a background on that story.
Context.
Yes.
Yeah, of course. So, I worked at... I'm just going to name the places, I guess.
Sure.
I worked at DreamWorks Animation, and then I also worked at Legendary Comics. Mm. And in between that time as well, I worked at a few like VFX studios in the LA area. And I mean, kind of the reason I got into art was because of animation, like specifically Prince of Egypt and cool. Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Oh, yeah.
So working at DreamWorks Animation was actually, because they were the studio that did Prince of Egypt, and then being able to meet like the art directors on that was super cool and like amazing. And the thing about working at studios is that it's a really collaborative like teamwork experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that's the thing I miss most now that they do kind of solo convention stuff. But there's like, you know, pros and cons to each thing. And the cons of working in a studio system is that it's really hard if you want to have like any kind of like authorial, you know, like mm-hmm. be an author or a creator of like something that's 100% yours. In a studio system, it's a decision that has to go through like all these budgets and then like, you know, marketing and focus groups. And like that works, you know, if you want to make a widely successful commercial thing. But, you know, I think I got tired of, I mean, I love it, but I got really incentivized to just make my own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I like wanted to take control of that. So
yeah.
I just sort of, yeah, just like was like, let's just make the stuff that I've been making on the side. Let's just do that. And that's what I've been doing.
So wow. What was the first con experience as an entrepreneur like?
So it's really interesting because I actually started doing cons like as a hobby when I was like in middle school.
Oh, cool.
And I like that was just because I like drawing art. I was like, if I print some stuff, I'm sure I'll like not lose money, right? And I did okay as like a kid. And, right?
Wow.
You were like a talented kid.
Jeez.
I mean, I was a bored kid. I didn't have many friends, I guess.
Same.
But yeah,
I didn't need to. I didn't make art. Just sat around being mad at my friends.
It'd be like that, right? But then I think the first, because I was doing cons like while I was working at these studios, you know, like on the weekends, and like my supervisors were really understanding. They were like, hey, just take Thursday off too then. The first time I really like did it solo full time was like immediately. I think it was during like college commencement. Like I went to go do a con in Chicago and then I like flew back to Boston. I was like, yeah, I'm graduating. Oh shit.
Wow.
So what were you doing at these cons? What were you making?
I do like prints, bookmarks, like charms, plushes. I had some art books going on for a while because we did like a Game of Thrones Kickstarter thing. We donate a lot of stuff to charity for that because George loves wolves. But yeah, and then because the Japanese conventions are really more like amateur like comics, I've started making more like comic stuff, like just original comic stuff, comic works. And that is kind of the direction I'm like trying to go to right now, as opposed to just kind of doing fan art, like charms and stuff like mm-hmm. that.
Interesting.
So, I mean, it's interesting. Like, so you have to create these original characters and then sell them to people at conventions, which people kind of love going for their, you know, their favorite characters. So how do you interest people in your characters and your original creations?
Yeah. Some people have an aesthetic. If, you know, it's like, oh, I like really kawaii stuff, or I like really, like, gore stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If you have something that's in that aesthetic, they get really interested. And I've also found that, like, people are actually really, like, they're there. I mean, you can make a lot of money by making fan art, but a lot of people are just there for, like, content, and they like listening to pitches. And, like, it's really cool because if you're passionate about something and you start talking at them, they're like, oh, I like this pitch. Like, tell me more. You know, people, like, at cons are actually a lot more interested in original stuff than you would assume. But I think also if you build an online brand and if you're, like, already putting the stuff online and people are familiar with that and, like, familiar with you, it becomes also a thing of, like, oh, I want to support this artist that, like, you know, I support all the other stuff. I'm going to buy the original stuff.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I'm saying, have you like gotten to know people and see them at a lot of conventions and sell them stuff? Have you gotten your own fans?
Yeah, it's actually like really, oh my God. Yeah, it's really cute. Since I'm based in Texas, so I do a lot of like the local Texas cons, even the ones that aren't big. So there's a certain amount of like texting people that like bring all their friends to my table as well, and I keep joking I need to make like a customer loyalty card, like, oh, like every time you talk to my table like 10 times they'll give you something. Yeah, and then at certain cons that you do, like people will be like, hey, remember me from blah, and you're like, yeah, if you do, and yeah, if you don't as well. But I think the one that like I like really started crying this time was like when I was at Tokyo this past May at Super Comic City. And like, I don't speak Japanese, but I do post my stuff on like some Japanese websites like Pixiv. And I like, you know, try and like interact with the artists over there with like really simple stuff, like, oh, cute emojis. A few artists or a few like people like came to buy my stuff, and they were like, they couldn't speak English either. Or they can speak English and I can speak Japanese, but they were like pointing to my stuff after they bought it. They're like, big fan, like excited.
Aww.
And I was like, oh, wait, shut up.
I yelled at them.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I was like, get out. But yeah.
So obviously, I think it's safe to say that you were glad you made this jump from working in the safe studio system to kind of going off this adventure of your own.
For me, yeah, it's been really rewarding. And being able to choose what I do and like the timeline, and then even things like I get to choose my manufacturers, I get to choose like my venues, I get to choose pricing, all of that, like from the business side, it's been really rewarding.
What have you had to learn
creative control
beyond, I mean, when you're at a studio, you kind of, you know, you do the art, right? Now you have to do everything. What have been the biggest learning curves?
I think the problem for me personally is that I like having control over everything, which means I'm like managing the social media. I'm like emailing people. I'm like booking all these things. I'm doing art is actually like 20 to 50% of what I do. And then like the other time is spent like managing this. And so the hardest thing for me has been learning like to give up that control and like to not micromanage that stuff. And so like right now I have someone else who speaks to like manufacturers for me, which was like a hard thing for me to like want to give up because I'm like, no, but I want this perfectly. Like I want this type of ink. I want this type of, you know, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. But then being able to be like, it's okay to not, you know, be in control of everything. Just go do the art, Susan. Yeah.
It's nice that you can afford someone to help you with that stuff.
Yeah. It's been really cool. It's been all, like, I've been doing this for, I guess, since 2016. And it's been like financially more rewarding than I thought it would be too, which has been really cool.
Yeah, I would hope so.
I want to read a tweet that I saw that I think a friend or a fan of yours tweeted at you because I think it's amazing. God. I cannot believe you went to Harvard and have such a classy art style, yet you make a living off of Shrek Wazowski merch. I saw Shrek Wazowski and I love him, but can you just tell me, like, does he have a backstory? Like, how do you even arrive at that?
That's my brand. it's partially because, so like, I worked at DreamWorks Animation, mm-hmm. and they're very like, in a good way, they're very like corny about like the fact that Shrek is like their money bag and that, you know, they've gotten like an Oscar because of Shrek. And it's really pure. And so like, I have to stand like anything that DreamWorks does. Okay. Unironically and also ironically. But I also think in the Artist Alley circuit at conventions, first of all, there's a lot of drama. And I think some people tend to get very like, well, I mean, there is a tendency for people to get very think too much of what they do and what they make. And like, I kind of do acknowledge the fact that like in Artist Alleys, we're kind of in a legal gray zone unless you're making completely original content.
Sure.
And like, I'm like, you should have a bit more fun. Like, take yourself less seriously, you know? So like, Shrek Wazowski, you know, like, and dabbing pandas. Like, you know, have fun.
I mean, look, we're at Sci-Fi, and that's, you know, we have
just
the same parent company.
Make fun of it, yeah.
Well, and we got, like, Minions when those movies come out all over the place. We're at 30 Rock, and, like, there's just Minions friggin' everywhere.
There we go.
Yeah. And, but look, those Minions are probably indirectly paying my salary. So.
Or directly.
Yeah. Exactly. I take gobs of cash in the Minions. They hand me unmarked envelopes with cash.
Well, that's awesome. I hope that listeners go to your store because it's just so like unique
it.
And arresting.
What's the URL? Plug it. Right
yeah,
now.
Where can they find you?
I have a TikTok right now, and it's like YOSB. That TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
That's also my Tumblr. My Twitter is not the same as all my other social media because I'm a terrible manager. But if you go to my Tumblr, you can probably find like all my other links.
Cool.
Yeah. If you like Shiba's, I post that on Twitter a lot.
Yes.
Yeah, Emily loves it. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for emailing me and for coming on the show and talking about all this awesome stuff.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, I guess that'll just about do it. We talked to four people who are way more talented and motivated than us and take their careers into their own hands.
Yeah. So. And perform labor. All of them were like putting out good vibes into the world. I thought that was nice.
Yeah, they like, and they do like so many different things, right? Financial and they manage people and
retail.
They do, yeah. They are,
yeah.
I wish we lived in a country that rewarded that more, like with healthcare and all things like that.
Isn't that supposed to be the backbone of America?
Yeah.
Like, they're all pulling themselves up by their own bootstraps.
Yeah, it's true. And I encourage everyone. It's hard for me to be like, go follow your dreams. Because, like, what if you fail?
Who knows?
Yeah, that's my bumper sticker. Follow your dreams, but what if you fail? But I mean, I think like all four of them are like really awesome for being admirable for doing
absolutely.
That.
I feel better that they're out in the world doing that.
Yeah, champions for good.
Mm-hmm.
God, I'm corny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, look, I'm not going to encourage you to follow your dreams, but I am going to encourage you to subscribe and give us 5 stars.
Follow our dreams.
Yeah, please. Like, look, I'm sure whoever's listening, I'm sure you're a lovely person and you've got dreams. And like, if you want to go after them, that's fine. I'm not going to encourage it because I don't want to be responsible if you fail.
Yeah. For every star you give us, a dream of yours will come true.
And like, please make it 5. Don't be like, oh, I only want one dream to come true, so I'll give you 1 star. Like,
yeah,
don't do that.
Shoot high.
That's like an asshole move.
I mean, yeah. Like, speaking of side hustles and like working because you like it, this is my side hustle.
Yeah.
If you want me to have a little easier time paying my bills.
I mean, look, we're now promoted on the comics and comics culture thing on iTunes.
Oh, yeah.
So we know more of you are listening, like, even if by accident.
You there.
Yeah. Hey, did you find us by accident? He said, that's an interesting alliteration, Phantom Files. It's right next to the official Marvel podcast. Why would I listen to that when I can listen to 2 goofballs I don't know?
We're actually featured on the iTunes page for alliterative titles as well.
Yep. Yeah. Right next to the Penis Podcast.
Which we also run.
Yeah, yeah, we do that. So the Phantom Files, the Penis Podcast. Yep, that's my side hustle.
Oh, God.
So give us 5 stars, because honestly, like, the sheer number of great reviews we get for the Penis Podcast is really putting this one to shame. All right, well, Emily, other than at Penis Podcast on Twitter, how can people get in touch with you on the internet?
I'm Emily G. Monster at Twitter, and I would love if listeners sent me questions or even just said, hey, I listened to an episode.
Yeah.
That'd be
please,
great.
Please tell her how great she was on this podcast.
Yeah, or rag on Jordan. That's always fun.
Oh, yeah. Honestly, if you give us 5 stars and like send us a grab of it, you can tweet anything at me and I won't care. Like, send us a screen grab of it and then be like, I hate you and all of your family stupid, and like,
yeah,
make, I don't know,
just don't curse because Jordan and I are verified and you might get suspended.
Yeah, we're verified, and you know, Twitter, because they you know, as top conservatives on Twitter, we have a lot of sway.
Oh,
boy, that felt gross saying.
Hashtag TCOT. Okay.
I'm at Jordan Zacharin, and we're at Phantom Files Sci-Fi. We're starting to tweet a little more.
Yeah,
we're starting to. Yeah,
I'm starting to retweet memes.
Yeah, that's the key to victory. This is like our 51st episode, which is crazy.
Whoa.
Yeah, so anyways, follow us. Like, if you haven't gotten us 5 stars at this point, but you're still listening, what is wrong with you?
I think they've fallen and they like, can't get up.
Like, if you're injured or feel sick, call 911. Otherwise, give us 5 stars. Those are the 2 things you can do right now. And then come back next week or subscribe. It'll just show up on your iPhone.
Yeah,
say
you don't
iPod,
even have to do anything.
Yeah. I have so many episodes of podcasts I haven't listened to, but they just take
don't
up space on my phone. Not our podcast.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like other podcasts, but like really popular ones that don't need me.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
We need you.
We need you.
We need you so bad. Like, oh. What's great is that NBC is promoting this podcast right now. I'm like, Seth Meyers and Rachel Maddow show, I can only assume. And some people were like, wow, you know, I really got a lot of great news from Rachel Maddow. She was really insightful. I want to relax a little bit with some. I like geeky things. Listen to these lunatics.
2 people yelling penis podcast.
In Al Sharpton's studio, no less.
Over and over.
Honestly,
man.
Look, if we get enough people that respond to us on Twitter and say they want us to start the Penis Podcast, we will.
Yeah,
it
won't
be for NBC Universal, I don't think.
It will live at godzillasdick.com.
Which I just renewed.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, go to godzillasdick.com after you.
You'll learn something.
Yeah, you learn a lot, actually. So, 5 stars.
Mm-hmm.
Show, like, take a photo of it, tweet it at us, and insult me. Either insult me or tell us you want the Penis Podcast.
Yeah.
One of the two.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I mean, you can say something nice.
Yeah, whatever. Up
all
to
right.
you.
Well, it's been wonderful. We'll leave it at that.
Happy
Thank
Labor
you.
Day.
Yeah. Go, you know, happy Labor Day. Power to the workers. Mm-hmm. And goodbye and good luck. No one used that before, right? That's new. That's
yeah,
me.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Good night and good luck.
Nice job.
Thanks.